Well, hello and welcome to this edition of the Grant Us Knowledge podcast. I'm Grant Goulavon, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. And AFPPA is an organization that's dedicated to expanding liberty for Pennsylvanians by eliminating barriers to opportunity that currently exist and by opposing the imposition of new ones that would get in the way of Pennsylvania's success, whether it's in economic-related issues, education. Basically, we're an opportunity organization, and we want to see people succeed and realize their fullest potential. And on this edition of Grant Us Knowledge, wanted to kind of give everyone, because we're coming fast toward the election and can't get here too soon from the perspective of a lot of people. But at the same time that the election is approaching fast, the days left in the Pennsylvania General Assembly's legislative session for 2019-2020 are dwindling fast as well. And so I thought it would be a good idea today to bring everyone kind of up to date on the issues that AFPPA has been working on over the past couple of years, issues that are still hanging out there with the potential for success that remains as we still have these few days left of session. And to do that and to get into a little bit more depth with that, I'd like to welcome a very special guest today. She is the State Director of Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, and my boss, Ashley Klingensmith. Ashley, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Grant, thanks so much for having me. This is awesome.
It's a true pleasure, and thank you again for doing this. I appreciate it. In terms of issues that we've been working on, and there are numerous ones, but for the sake of time, I want to try to give everyone sort of a brief overview of where some of these things stand, how they're important to expanding, protecting, and conserving Pennsylvanians' liberty, and what the prospects for them are going forward for the ones that are still out there as potential successes in this session. But the first one I wanted to talk about is something that, again, is very important to expanding opportunity, and that's the issue of occupational licensing reform. And I know that before I joined AFPPA this year, you had done a great deal of work in shepherding this toward the finish line, and just wondered if you could tell our listeners about what the issue is, why it's important, and what has been done to date on that issue.
Yeah, absolutely, Grant. Before we actually get into that specific legislation and issue, I think it's important to just kind of provide a little bit of context about this legislative session. And it has been, like so much else throughout this calendar year, it's been unprecedented. And there's been, I think, quite a lot of shuffling with priorities, both by our executive and our governor, but also by the legislature, just because of the nature of, COVID-19 and all of the different corollary issues that have spawned from that. But I always think this is such a fascinating number. So a service that we use, the Pennsylvania Legislative Services, is a tool that kind of helps folks like us make sense of everything that is happening in Harrisburg. And so we subscribe to PA Legislative Services, and it has this really neat tracker called Bill Filing Statistics. And this legislative session, the 2019-2020 session, is on pace to have more bills introduced than in any other session in the past. There's been 4,106 bills introduced, which I think is just extraordinary. 4,106. Yes. And so that's a lot of legislation, to parse through and pour through. And so as we talk today, I just want to remind those listening, at Americans for Prosperity, what we're looking at are those bills and that legislation that's really going to be most transformative in people's lives. And you wanted to talk a little bit, I think, to start off with about occupational licensing reform. And look, the vision for economic opportunity here at Americans for Prosperity is to empower people to earn their success and live meaningful lives. And so what does that look like from a public policy perspective? Well, it means cutting the red tape that Harrisburg and Washington, frankly, has erected that is keeping folks from just realizing whatever American dream is theirs. And for some people, it's, you know, sending their child to a private school. For others, it's home ownership. For others, it's a second car. Who knows? But we just want folks to have the least arduous path possible to getting there. And so what is really interesting about what we do throughout any given legislative session is that we not only work to advance good policy, but we also look to put the brakes on policy that might be bad. And so we actually saw a few different bills that would address occupational licensing that we said, hey, these are not quite big and bold enough. You know, these start to kind of nip at the edges, but they're not addressing the issue holistically. And so we actually were able to stop a couple of those in committee, which was great. And that paved the way for getting comprehensive occupational licensing reform done. And so, you know, I think folks, I should probably answer, what are occupational licensing licenses? Well, they are government approvals for who can work in any certain field. And they used to be, you know, reserved for professions like doctors and lawyers, but they have been expanded to include things like hair braiders, athletic trainers, florists. And so all of these different groups of professionals are having to get a permission slip from Harrisburg just to make a living. And so, you know, there are a lot of different ways to kind of start addressing this overreach. But one of those ways is by addressing some of the good moral character requirements that have long been a reason for boards to just deny someone a license. And so we started working early on with Representative DeLosier, Senator DeSanto on some really key legislation that would mandate that all of these different licensing boards only withhold a license for convictions that are directly related to the practice of the occupation, and that the boards really start considering, you know, the nature of the offense, the amount of time that has passed since a conviction, evidence of the applicant's fitness to practice the occupation, and other just relevant factors prior to withholding a license. And so we saw this literally pass the Senate unanimously, pass the House by a vote of 193-4, so nearly unanimously, and became Act number 53 on July 1st, which was incredible. And so this was a huge win here in Pennsylvania. We definitely scaled the importance of this in both chambers and to the administration, and we're just elated to see something that covered all of the different boards instead of maybe just cosmetology or just any one carve out. So this was a big win.
No, absolutely. And it's a great example of how not all of the barriers to opportunity that exist that are thrown up by the state government, by the federal government, are highly visible. This is one that would slip by a lot of people. This is one that may not occur to many people as being a significant barrier to opportunity. But for so many Pennsylvanians who are in that situation, this is an incredible lifeline, an incredible way for them to be able to serve productively, to get back to a productive career and a productive life once they've paid their debt to society, and it's no longer a millstone around their necks in trying to continue with being successful citizens and contributors to our economy and society. So it's a tremendous bit of work, and I know you had everything to do with it from our side, and that was an absolutely tremendous win. One thing where we're currently working very hard to provide some relief from don't want to say a naturally imposed barrier, but like say a barrier that has affected every Pennsylvanian's life and pretty much everyone in the country and around the world, and that's the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. And some of the people most affected, as listeners to Grant Us Knowledge will know from several episodes ago, have been Pennsylvania school children and families. Because with the orders shutting down the school system back in March of this year, many Pennsylvania students either received limited instruction for the remainder of the 2019-2020 school year, or in some cases, no instruction. And so that's left many of these students, many of these families searching for ways to get their children's education back on track. We spoke I spoke with Senator Judy Ward, Representative Clint Owlett about legislation that they had to create back on track education scholarship accounts. These would be $1,000 accounts funded by Federal CARES Act dollars for pandemic related expenses that would allow Pennsylvania's parents and families and children to spend that $1,000 on approved educational expenses, anything from tutoring, equipment, curriculum, private school tuition, all of these things. Sounded like a pretty good idea. Sounded like everyone something everyone could support. We found out, of course, that that wasn't quite the case last week. We talk a little bit about what happened on the road to getting these bills considered in their respective chambers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, we had House Bill 2696, the House version of the ESA bill, on the calendar, on the House Education Committee's calendar for, I believe it was, Thursday, October 1st.
Yes.
And the committee hearing began, and the chairman, Chairman Sonny, let everyone know, the members of the committee and those listening and watching, that he had pulled that from the calendar. And so so it did not receive consideration, which was quite disappointing. But I think that on Monday, October 5th, we had Senate Bill 1230 receive a hearing in the Senate. And so there was some really great information shared from some of the allies that you've brought onto the podcast, and just those from around the Commonwealth who testified. And so prayerfully, that will be able to advance out of committee here in the not so distant future. But, you know, as always here in Pennsylvania, with legislation that impacts education, there is just a whole lot of interests that tend to become very local, very vocal, and very present to members in the General Assembly. And so I, as always, want to encourage folks that when Americans for Prosperity provides an outlet for activism, and one of the easiest places to do that and make your voice heard is simply by visiting AmericansForProsperity.iVolunteers.com, there are often letters that if you just sign them, they will go to the members that represent you in Harrisburg, both your state senator and your state representative. And so we have a letter entitled Help Students Across Pennsylvania, Help Lighten the Burden of Parents Who Are Dealing with School Closures. It's a letter all about this ESA bill. You don't have to do any thinking. You just have to sign it. But these are the kind of contexts that folks that believe we want to empower students and we want to empower parents and families. You know, these are the messages that folks need to be hearing under the dome, because they hear a whole lot of other messages of folks that want to support systems over students. And that has never been something that we have been a proponent of.
No, for folks who didn't follow or didn't get to see the coverage of the hearing or get to see it live, you could not find a starker contrast, I think, between two opposing groups in the testimony. There were two panels, the first of which considered was composed of all of the, what I would call the four-letter organizations who purport to represent parents, students, public education, the education establishment of Pennsylvania. And someone could have fallen into a deep sleep 20 years ago and heard the arguments about why we can't have choice for parents and students in greater taking greater control of their educational options. And yep. You would have woken up at that hearing on October 5th and thought you wouldn't have missed a single day. Same old, tired, worn-out arguments about why the public education system will just completely collapse if we allow our parents and students, and even not all students. I mean, this would be an income-tested program, means-tested program. But if one dime is spent on something that the education establishment doesn't believe it should be spent on, or whether it goes outside the public school system, you know, the world is going to end and fall in on them. And I think that's their fear, because you heard parents testify, you heard education advocates testify, you heard people who are involved in the system where choice works for parents, for unfortunately, you know, not for enough parents and students, but where, you know, having educational options has brought better outcomes. And absolutely that it's money should follow the child rather than follow the system. Not spending more time on that unpleasantness, let's go on to a more pleasant subject where we saw some historic movement in the House of Representatives, and that's in the area of nursing scope of practice reform. And that is something that has been worked on for multiple legislative sessions. And can you tell us a little bit about how that issue has begun to move finally in our House of Representatives?
Yeah, absolutely. And as always, I like to start with kind of the vision that we have for healthcare at Americans for Prosperity. And we want to open our healthcare system to innovation. We think empowering doctors, nurses, medical researchers to do what they do best, which is help people live safer, healthier lives. That is the role of state governments and of the federal government, not telling us what we need. The medical professionals and certainly patients, I think, can discern that, for themselves. And so one of the pieces of legislation that we have worked on for goodness, I think now since the beginning of 2013, is called Nursing Scope of Practice. And what this legislation would do is give full practice authority to experienced nurse practitioners, and that will increase Pennsylvanians' access to healthcare and help relieve some of the provider shortages that we have across the state. You know, we've got about 540,000 Pennsylvanians that reside in communities that face a physician shortage. You know, if we are folks that are committed to making sure more people have access to better health care at more affordable costs, expanding the ability of nurse practitioners to kind of meet those primary care needs is essential. And so this has been introduced, like I said, since the 2013-14 legislative session. This legislation has consistently gotten through the process in the Senate and then been held up in committee in the House, actually never moving out of committee in the House before. And just a couple of weeks ago, we are so very grateful for Chairman Hickernell for moving Representative Jesse Topper's bill, House Bill 100, out of committee. It passed unanimously, which is incredible, and a clear signal that, you know, most all members, for the most part, are supporting, you know, reforms like this. Is I know we've talked about before, telemedicine. You know, that legislation had a bipartisan swath of support. And so we really want to start working on getting some of these things through the process completely and to Governor Wolf, because we are confident the administration supports reforms like this. You know, early in the pandemic, they actually alleviated at the Department of State a lot of the different requirements of nurse practitioners so that they could practice with greater practice authority. And so where we can find agreement and accord between the General Assembly and the governor, we should be doing that because it's beneficial to Pennsylvanians. And frankly, that's what people expect.
No, I couldn't agree with that sentiment more, and I think that that gets, you know, as we see, gets lost so often. But I think that, you know, at least in some ways, the, you know, the arrival of the COVID-19 pandemic has caused at least a little bit of rethinking about what makes sense in a not only in a COVID-19 environment, but whether or not restrictions that have been in place for years and years actually make sense and are actually serving the communities that they say they're meant to serve. And again, a reform such as this certainly points us in the right direction. Hopefully that augurs for more cooperation as we move through the remainder of this session and then on into the upcoming one starting in next January. And, you know, sort of on a related note, you know, there are a number of bills that are in that same vein that deal with regulatory reform generally that are at various stages of the process, have several of them teed up in the Senate. We spoke about some of them on an earlier edition of Grant Us Knowledge. Senate Bill 5 by Senator John DeSanto. Senate Bill 253, Senator Christian Phillips Hill. Senator DeSanto's bill would require that the General Assembly approve any regulation with a cost of more than $1 million. Again, Senator Phillips Hill's bill would provide for, again, greater regulatory relief, greater transparency, and greater ability to push these things through the process. Where do we stand in terms of getting those moving?
Great question. And look, the companions of those Senate bills have already passed through the House with a majority vote. And so now we need to see these Senate bills. They have been voted out of the Senate Intergovernmental Operations Committee. Chairman Doug Mastriano has done a wonderful job as a new chairman. But now we need them to be considered by the full Senate, and we need to get them, you know, over to the House for concurrence and then off to the governor. You know, right now, I think what Pennsylvanians deserve is a real path to a robust economic recovery post-COVID. We have been put through a lot here with kind of an indiscriminate statewide shutdown. And I think what folks want is to get back to work and to get back to work in a way that they are able to fully capitalize on an opportunity to make whatever widget they make or sell whatever goods they sell. And so we have got to start lifting some of the onerous regulations that are in place. They are too often just confusing and they're burdensome, and there is little regard to how they would actually be put into practice, yet people are required to comply. And so, you know, our code contains about 12.8 million words. Assuming someone spent about 40 hours a week reading it, it would take them 18 weeks just to read our code. And so it is really time that we start addressing this overwhelming, I think, status quo that so many have just become used to, that imposes huge costs on people. And really start passing legislation like the RAINS Act and like the Independent Office of the Repealer and like the Regulatory Compliance Officer legislation, so that we can give some much needed relief to folks at a time when they truly need it most, and that is in this post-COVID economic recovery period.
Yes. One final thing that, of course, COVID has affected everything, but the overarching issue that is coloring everything that's going on in the Capitol is the matter of the state budget for the current fiscal year, which back in May was approved on a partial basis with the a 5-month temporary budget put in place. That is going to require action by November 30th, which is the end of the legislative session, and will require legislators to come back after the election, more than likely to finish the work on that. So, in the context of the, you know, the multi-billion-dollar deficit that we expect to face, It's more important than ever to try to find reforms that not only make sense from an opportunity perspective, but also from a fiscal perspective. And I think a couple of reforms that AFPPA has worked on very hard, and I know you personally have worked very hard on probation reform and criminal justice reform. And can you talk about how those types of reforms help to satisfy both of those objectives of providing opportunity and also providing some fiscal relief?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we support smart on crime, soft on taxpayer reforms that make communities safer and that improve people's lives. And so that means both offenders and victims. It means that, you know, we need a criminal justice system that is first and foremost protecting people and preserving public safety, but also, you know, removing barriers to opportunity for folks with criminal records. And so here in Pennsylvania, we are spending an extraordinary amount of money on community supervision. We have very high rates of probation violations and parole violations because folks are on under community supervision for such an outsized period of time. And so what this legislation would do is say, hey, we need to refocus our resources on the violent offenders and folks that really need the attention and the watchful eye of maybe a probation officer, not someone that is simply, you know, gone the wrong way down a one-way street while they were on probation and consequently are technically violated and put back in prison. You and I maybe go down a one-way street the wrong way and we simply get a warning and other people are put behind bars. And so this would just create some real common sense reforms for folks with, you know, with felonies. They would have a presumptive hearing after 5 years. For folks with misdemeanors, it would be 3 years. And so we could start to shorten those terms. And I think that would be beneficial for folks to be able to reintegrate back into communities far more successfully than is happening right now. And so I'll just say, you know, that legislation, Senate Bill 14, passed the Senate unanimously. It also passed the House out of the Judiciary Committee and has just been hung up on second consideration. And so we are really hoping that can move. And I think it's going to go a very long way to helping people in real time, but then also helping with some of the costs that we spend at the Department of Corrections, which is great. And you're exactly right. We are in a very precarious position when it comes to our budget, and we need to have everything on the table. You know, bold policies like the Taxpayer Protection Act, now is the time to move those things. They passed out of their respective chambers committees, but now they're before the full chamber. And this is the time to start looking at, you know, transformative spending reform policies that will, you know, limit what Pennsylvania can do by way of, you know, spending. And that's what we're going to have to do when we're facing a $5 billion hole.
Now, if ever there were a time for bold moves and busting up the status quo, this is certainly it. And we're going to be continuing to work very hard here in Harrisburg and with our activists around the state to shake loose some of these reforms that are currently being hung up and get them to the finish line. Well, Ashley, thank you again so much for your very, very thorough and informative update on everything that's going on here. Again, want to thank you for your time and all the good work that you've done, and you know, looking forward to continuing to push this forward here with the help of everyone out there and all the tools we have. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. This was so fun. I look forward to coming back in the near future.
I think we'll probably have you back. I think you know somebody here, so I think we got you an in. No, again, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I want to thank all of you for being listeners to the Grant Us Knowledge podcast. To learn more about Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania, you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania. And so signing off here, this is Grant Gulabon, continuing in the words of the great economist Walter E. Williams, to push back the frontiers of ignorance and to sell my fellow man on the blessings of liberty. Until next time on Grant Us Knowledge, thank you for being here, and we'll see you soon.